Well, today you got me all to yourself. So let's do it. And welcome to the 222 Paranormal Podcast. I'm your solo host, Joe. Jen's still feeling a little bit under the weather, so she won't be able to record tonight. We had a family gathering, and we all got sick. All of us. It's like, we don't know what it was, but we all got sick. And Jen's still feeling a little bit under the weather, so she's skipping tonight's recording. You're stuck with me, and hope you enjoy it. So, what'd you think of last week's show? Oh my God, talking to Susie about the Pugwudgies, I learned so much. I mean, I knew about like gremlins and goblins and stuff like that. And I mean, we did talk about Pugwudgies a long time ago. And, you know, I love Native American lore, stuff like that. But to have somebody with that much knowledge on the show, I mean, obviously you listened to it last week and you noticed that I really didn't talk that much. And when I did talk, I kind of had the wrong questions that because I didn't know. And I was learning as you were too. And like I said, it was just awesome. It was awesome to have her on. Susie's a great speaker. She does a lot of events. She speaks it on a lot of different podcasts. And like I said, we were just honored to have her on. And it was fun. But this week, I want to go over a couple of different things. First off, I want to talk about what I saw in the news. It was on Channel 13's website, which is a local news outlet here. They said that the Pentagon study released Friday that examined the report sightings of UFOs over nearly the last century found no evidence of aliens or extraterrestrial intelligence. A conclusion consists with the past U.S. government efforts to access the accuracy of the claims that have captivated the public for decades. The study from the Defense Department investigated since 1945 of reports of sightings of unidentified anomalous phenomenon, more popularly known as UFOs, found no evidence of any of them were sightings of aliens or that the U.S. government and private companies have reverse-engineered extraterrestrial technology and basically says they're not hiding it. All investigative efforts, levels of communication conducted that most sightings were ordinary objects phenomenon as a result of misidentification, said the report, which was made by Congress after a volume of reports focused on more recent research than that will be out later. U.S. officials have endeavored to find answers to legends of reported UFO sightings for years, but so far have not identified any actual evidence of external or extraterrestrial life. A 2001 government report that revealed 144 sightings of aircraft or other devices apparently flying at mysterious speeds or trajectories found no extraterrestrial links, but drew few other conclusions and called for a better data collection. The issue received fresh attention last summer when a retired Air Force intelligence officer testified to Congress that the U.S. was conducting a long-standing program that received and reverse-engineered unidentified flying objects. The Pentagon has declined his claims and says that late 2022 that a new Pentagon office was set up to track reports of unidentified flying objects. The same one that released Friday's report had received several hundred new reports but found no evidence so far of alien life. The authors of Friday's report said the purpose was to apply rigorous scientific analysis to subject that has long captivated the American public's imagination. AARO recognizes that many people sincerely hold versions of their beliefs which are based on their perception of past experiences. the experiences of others whom they trust, or media and online outlets they believe to be sources of credible and verifiable information, the report says. The proliferation of television programs, books, movies, and the vast amounts of internet and social media content centered on the UAP-related topics most likely influenced the public conversation on this topic and reinforced the beliefs within some sections of the population to be added. So that is the report that came out on Friday. And basically, it's crap. I know I shouldn't talk like that, but come on. They're saying that the population or the proliferation of television programs, books, blah, 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 caused all this, all these people to believe that they saw UFOs. Well, UFOs have been seen way before even writing. There's cave drawings of UFOs. There's paintings from the 1500s, 1600s that, or even earlier, that show UFOs in those paintings. There's thousands and thousands of documented cases from people all over the world. And not just like the farmers out or the people out partying and all of a sudden they see UFOs. No, these sightings have been caught by pilots, military people, cops, doctors, you know, all these people that they consider, in quotations, credible, but also normal people. There's that case in Africa where South Africa, where a UFO landed in a schoolyard full of kids. And every one of the kids gave a description of what happened. And they all said the same thing, but yet they didn't collaborate. You know what I mean? It wasn't like they all got together and go, okay, we're going to say this or this. And yes, some accounts were a little different, but they're all close enough that they all matched. You know, you're not going to have these kids that in South Africa that have no access to Facebook or stuff like this. And I forget the year this was, but it was a while ago. And they admit that they saw this UFO. Some of the kids even touched it. You had the Betty and Barney Hill story. You had Travis Walton's story. You had all these stories. You have stories for years of people that say that they've been abducted and generationally abducted. Okay. I mean, come on. And then to have, you know, the talks in Congress on Capitol Hill, having these people come in and tell their stories. And, you know, they mention it, one of the gentlemen in this story here. And they basically say that he lied, that there's no such thing. You know, I mean, and he was under oath. Now, granted, people will lie under oath, like, you know, at courts and stuff like that. But come on, he was under oath. And he also said that a lot of times when he was talking, he couldn't tell the actual congressman something because he didn't have the clearance. He says, no, we'd have to go into that special room. I forget the name he gave, but you'd have to go in the special room, and I'm only allowed to say this in that room where it's soundproof and all that stuff. You know, basically this report has to be written by someone that is a denier, obviously. But, you know, I mean, come on. Saying that the phenomenon of UFOs is complete and other trash, that, you know, people are making stuff up and they're not seeing what they're seeing, and that every single UFO is just, you know, swamp gas or whatever. I mean, come on. Think about MUFON. How many, you know, reports they get every year or every month. I mean, we're good friends with a lot of people in MUFON and a lot of directors like Bill Konkoleski and stuff like that. And they get reports all the time. And a lot of the reports that they get, they don't even publicize because, you know, they do have some that, you know, maybe a plane or something, or, you know, they talk about the triangles, you know, maybe it was that stealth bomber or something, but there are so many that they can't explain that they consider credible because they can't rule out stuff. And that's another thing you got to think about too, is when, you know, I say we, but I don't really investigate UFOs that much. I mean, I look into UFO claims, but I don't investigate, but the thing about it is it's just like the ghost hunting stuff. You go in there to debunk stuff. Okay. A lot of people say, oh, you're just going in to debunk. No. You go in to debunk these stuff so that the stuff that you can't debunk is the stuff that you really want to look into. And, you know, I mean, come on. When we're in a location and you hear your name get called out of, you know, right out of the air, or you hear someone say he's coming or something like that, which me and Harold were just talking today, because Harold's writing a book about his experiences. And one of the experiences that he's writing about was the warehouse that we did. And I've been meaning to put out that video. I need to really put that video out. But I want to have Harold in, and I want to sit down with him, and I want to go over on video so I can show you guys what our thoughts are about the warehouse. We did a Estes method at a warehouse in Toledo, Ohio, and it was by far the best investigation I have ever done. The Estes method, I was the one listening to the spirit box, and I was just like rattling stuff off. And when we went back to listen to it, you would not believe all the coincidences and the things that they were asking questions and I was answering. Then on top of that, and we were talking about it today, on top of that, you had unbelievable EVPs that, because I had my camera set up pointing at me. I had my digital recorder that I'm recording this show on tonight, set up with microphones around the room. And the whole time I was doing the Estes method, you could hear EVPs being recorded on these devices in the other rooms, all kinds of stuff. So, like I say, when you do these UFO investigations, it's like doing the investigation for a paranormal investigation, is where you have to rule out those things and you have to debunk these things, like the sounds. Another good example is we had Tim in here doing we did a show with Tim Woolworth a while ago. And if you get a chance, check that one out. He's a expert. And when I say expert, he is, you know, I don't use that term a lot, but he is an expert on ITC, which is like EVPs and stuff. And we kept hearing this knocking sound in my other room. Now, we've had stuff happen here in this studio while we were recording, but we kept hearing this knocking sound. And I was like, if you can hear me knock when I say to in 3, 2, 1, and there was a knock. And that happened a few times. And we were blown away. We're like, holy crap. Well, it turns out it was my refrigerators, and it was just the refrigerator makes a knocking sound. And it just so happens that I probably heard the pattern and expected it to come up. So when I said, well, do it now, it did it. So yeah, you have to debunk stuff. And you have to figure out, you know, what's the real thing and what's not. And you know, reading this article, it kind of pissed me off, because they basically said that everything was fake. Now, I feel, and I'm sure you've heard me say this many times, I feel that there is definitely life on other planets. I mean, come on. Like I mentioned before, probably 1,000 times, that we found our first exoplanet in like 84. Since then, we figured out that every single star. Now, I'm sure there's a couple stars out there that don't, but I mean, in general, every single star out there has planets around it. So when you look up in the sky and, you know, your visual with your naked eye, you only see like a quarter, if that, of the stars that are actually up there. And knowing that every single star has planets around it in the habitable zone, there's plenty of those, there's got to be life out there. And we've gone over this many times and, you know, about the Drake equation and stuff like that. And why aren't they here? What would be a reason why aliens are not here? There's so many different ones, but there's literally billions and billions of planets out there. So there's got to be life out there. I look at Mars. I believe that there was life on Mars before there was life on Earth, because just the evolution of the planets would have made it so that Mars cooled down enough to where it would have life on it. And they're finding a lot of stuff up there that I believe that there is life on Mars, or was, I should say. There's not anymore, obviously, but there might have been life on Mars before. It could have just been plants or something. We don't know. But there's a lot of evidence that shows that there were structures and stuff up there. But Whether that's believable or not, we don't know, and we won't know till we get up there and get somebody up there that won't hide the evidence, you know. So anyways, I wanted to bring that up about this article, and just, you know, I was blown away. And, you know, obviously the media is going to blow this out of proportion, saying that all UFOs are fake, all that. But say that to the millions and millions of people that have had sightings and ask their opinions. But anyhow, that's a long 20-minute rant that I did. But tonight, I wanted to talk about something else. I was listening to David Politis again today. I love the missing 411 stuff. And I was listening to some of the cases, and this thing just blows me away. And I want to go over a couple of cases that kind of stuck out in my mind. But before I get into some of these cases, you know, I mean, if you're not familiar with missing 411, this is some of the most interesting things you'll ever listen to. Now, you can go either online, what is it, on either YouTube, I think. I know David Politis has a lot of missing 411 stuff on YouTube, and I definitely recommend, you know, YouTube videos that he put out. And also, you can go to Amazon and watch Missing 411, The Hunted. That is an amazing one, because these are people that disappeared with no trace out in the woods, and they're hunters. They have weapons. They know the area. They hunt those areas all the time. They know those areas like the back of their hands. But yet people go missing. One of the stories in Missing 411, The Hunted, was of a hunter that couldn't walk. So what they did was the group would walk him out to, I believe he sat on a rock, okay, or they put a chair down. I don't remember. I'd have to watch the movie again. But this gentleman, I'll just say he sat on a chair because that'd be more comfortable and make more sense. They walked him out, set him on this chair, and basically they said, you know, we'll make the deer come to you. I mean, which isn't really hunting, but this guy has been hunting for 50 years, and he just wasn't mobile anymore, and he really loved hunting. And that's, you know, what he did. So they sat him down on this chair, I'll say. I can't remember if they set a rock or a chair, but I'll just say chair. They set him down on his chair, so they knew exactly where he was at. He couldn't move. He couldn't get up and walk away without help. So time went on, and they did their hunt, and they came back, and he wasn't on his chair. Couldn't find him. He disappeared and has never been found since. There's in all these cases, there's huge searches that go on, and the searches involve dogs that can never pick up a scent. Usually the weather changes to a really bad storm or snowstorm, or the weather just changes to where they can't search for the person. They are either elderly, 99% of them are male. Most disappear without a trace, and they never disappear around other people. It's always around a corner or something. But this gentleman was sitting there, and they came back, and he wasn't there. Everything was gone. His gun, everything. Now, another thing about being out in the woods when you're a hunter, and I'm not a hunter, so I don't know, but they said that when you're out hunting and you get lost, you shoot in the air. You make one shot, and then you make another shot. And that way, it's not like when you're hunting where you shoot and shoot. They know that with that pause, that's like a warning thing where I need help, and I'm in this direction, go the direction of the sound. They never heard that. And this gentleman was never found. The search didn't find anything. But in a lot of these cases, the people are found, but they're found in such strange situations, like found face down in a creek that's like 2 inches deep, and they say the cause of death is drowning. They find these people with their clothes taken off. The one case I remember hearing where the person was found standing up against a tree. He was like in rigor mortis where his body was stiff, and it was almost like he died on the ground and somebody propped him up against a tree. There was another case where many cases where they find the people's clothing and like their boots and their belt. Their belts are taken out of their pants, rolled up nicely and set next to their boots or their shoes. Clothing will be found next to the bodies. folded up nicely and just laid out like the person took off all their clothes, folded everything up nice, and died. And lots of times they say that, you know, they die from exposure or that. And I was listening to him today, David Plyce, talk today. And he says that a lot of times the initial autopsy shows the cause of death being exposure or stuff like that, or drowning. And then the family will do another, have another autopsy done, and they'll find something completely different, but yet they won't tell the family what the cause of death was. So there's a lot of conflict of interest on how the person actually died or that, but there's so many interesting stories. One of the stories was Paul Faganti. He was a park ranger, and he's the only park ranger ever to disappear and never be found and fall under the criteria of the missing 411. He was a park ranger for 20 years in this one location in Arizona. He was working one day and said that he is going to go for a hike and do some, you know, park ranger stuff where they walk around and look for people or whatever. And he walked away and he's been never found. They never found one trace of him. They did the search, you know, the dogs came in, couldn't find a scent, all the same stuff that we talk about. During the search, a big storm came through, you know, stuff like that. And he is the only case of a actual park ranger. Now, think about this case. He was a park ranger for 20 years in the same place, ever since 1980. And he went for his normal hike that he does. Now, being a park ranger, he'll have a gun. He'll have a radio. He has knowledge of the area. Don't know if he had a cell phone, but he has knowledge of the area. And lots of times people say, well, maybe they fell off a cliff or something like that. But you think about it. When you're out in the woods by yourself, are you dangling yourself next to cliffs or stuff like that? And that's one of the things, like David Plyce actually said, when he goes out in the woods, he doesn't get close to edges and stuff like that. And a lot of these people do the same thing. They know how to act in the woods and how to respect the woods and know what happens when you disrespect the woods and just get careless. And I'm sure some of these cases that of people disappearing in the woods or in the parks or whatever are where they fall down into a crevice or something. But then again, that doesn't really fit the criteria of the missing 411. And the thing is, like he said, that Yellowstone Park is the number one park that has the most missing 411 cases in it. People disappear there all the time. He said that an average of one person a week disappears somewhere in the United States. And you think about this too, is how many people disappear in cities? How many people go missing every day in cities? And some fit this criteria. Now, a lot of them that go missing in the cities are like, you know, something happened, you know, like drug deals or stuff like that. I don't know, but people go missing like this. But a lot of these cases, and one of the things that makes this different than those cases is lots of times the bodies are found, but they find the bodies in such strange situations. Like I said earlier, the body propped up against a tree, or their clothing neatly folded, or, you know, the remains found years later, 20 miles away from where the person went missing. And when I talk about 20 miles, I'm talking about like rough terrain in these national parks. There's cases, and this is part of it too, is a lot of these people that end up getting found are found on the trails where all the searchers would walk. There's many cases where someone goes missing and they find the remains laying in the path where all these searchers would walk to go do their search. I remember another case of a little boy who disappeared from a campsite. And it was one of them cases where the mother was standing there. She turned around for a minute, turned back, and the kid's gone. Now you're talking a two-year-old. His remains were found, like, I think they said like 5 or 10 miles up this mountain. Okay. And that case, Bear Grylls, the guy, the survivor man, he actually climbed the same route that kid would have had to take, and he couldn't make it. And you're talking a two-year-old kid found so far up that there's no explanation of how he got there. Now, David Plotius also talks about how he never will say, this is what happened. And he says that in all these cases, people disappear by themselves. Okay, so if the group is walking down a path, it's always when a person turns a corner and the rest of the group catches up to him, or he or they will say, I'm going to go ahead a little bit, and they'll disappear, never to be found. I know there's a case about a doctor, Dr. James Morgan. He was a ER doctor, and him and a bunch of guys, they decide to go climb this mountain in Vail, Colorado, and it was sort of like a winter hike. Now, he had a cell phone. He had a GPS. He had a avalanche transponder, so if there's an avalanche, the transponder will kick on. He had a set of skis that actually folded together to make a snowboard, so you could take it apart and use it as a like cross-country skis. He had a, what do you call it? Where, I can't think of the name of it, but it's a transponder that shows his location. He had one of those. He had his cell phone. He had a radio. He had a backpack full of food, all this stuff. And he was an avid outdoorsman. He went to this location all the time. He was the epitome of person that will not disappear. But yet, he told the group that he was going ahead a little bit. And now, this also was in a location that there was no snow. There was no snow yet. They were still going up to that elevation. And he said, you know, I'll meet you at this point, which is a rock. They got to that point. He wasn't there. They're like, oh, okay, he went on to the next one. So they went to the next one. He wasn't there. By this time, they were so far up the hill that they were actually in snow. And they found no tracks of him. So basically, he just vanished. So the search went on for 5 days. And they ended up having to stop the search because a storm came in that was so brutal that no one could search. So they had to call it off. Well, 20 days later, they found his backpack and a few other things, and they found his boots that were taken off and tied, the laces were tied. They found a few other things, but that's all they found. And to this day, he was never found. And he had all this equipment. He could have survived out there by himself and had all this equipment to let people know where he was, or, you know, to single people. I remember they said that in his backpack, they found his cell phone, his transponder to say where he was at, you know, the devices that he used to find. He had one of those poles that if you are looking for someone in an avalanche, it's a poker type deal thing where they slide it in, and if it stops, they know there's a person under the snow. So this guy, there's no way that he could disappear, but yet he did without a trace. There was another interesting case, this girl Janet. Okay, Janet was a big girl. She was 5'3", 250 pounds. But the thing is, a few years before that, she was in a bad car accident. And she had head trauma. So she had some brain, you know, traumatic brain injury, which made her handicapped, you know, disabled. She couldn't walk very good. She could walk, but she had to have assistance. And she was off balance all the time, you know, stuff like that. And she's also blind in one eye. So she was 53 years old. Oh, I'm sorry. I had this wrote down. I think she was 5'3". No. Okay. I'll have to look at this, but I don't know if I have this wrote down as she was 53 years old or 5'3". Okay. So we'll go with that. But she wasn't a kid. I know that. She was an adult. And she was camping with her mom. And her mom had to go to the bathroom. So they went up to the store, the camp store in the campsite, and she stood outside while her mom went in and went to the bathroom. And she says, her mom says she was only in there for about 5 minutes. She came back out and Janet was gone. And like they said, she could walk, but she couldn't walk that fast. And her mom ended up searching for her for a little bit and then got worried, you know, because she couldn't find her, walked around the area of the store, you know, probably 100 yards or whatever. I don't know. But she ended up calling the authorities, and there was a full-scale search for this girl. And same thing. They had helicopters come in. They had search teams, professional search teams with dogs and all that. The dogs couldn't pick up scents. They had, you know, the volunteers come in, the police, the park service, all that. All these people were searching for her, and they couldn't find her at all. She disappeared without a trace. And it's just, it's mind-blowing to think that all these cases, people disappear without a trace, or when they are found, they're found dead in different situations. A lot of these people that disappear, you know, besides, like, David did the story, Missing 411, The Hunters, which, like I said, check that out. I watched it, and it's kind of funny because at the end, there's a Ohio connection of somebody that I actually know, and his wife was hunting, and I won't tell you the ending, but you got to watch the show. She actually saw something that was super interesting, and I know these people. I know that they're not ones to make up stories, and they do a lot of research. But anyhow, a lot of these people that disappear are extremely smart. They're extremely well-versed in whether the hiking or whatever. A lot of them are athletes. A lot of them are marathon runners, you know, so they're healthy people. They are very smart. They are well-versed in the outdoors. They know when they're at these parks, what to do, what to take, you know, that they have supplies. But they just disappear, never to be seen again. So if you get a chance, look it up. I mean, there are so many stories of missing 411 that it's just so interesting. And even the Native Americans used to have a saying that you never leave the light of the fire. You never walk into the woods alone. In other words, you always use a buddy system. I don't know. But never leave the light of the fire. I think that's kind of interesting. And David Politis says that these missing 411 cases go back for years. Like, there are cases in the 1700s that match the criteria of the missing 411 stuff. So, you know, who knows? And get up there on YouTube. Search it. Now, like I said, there are some YouTube channels that do their versions of these. And you got, I mean, watch them. But unless David Politis is in there, or your George Norrie or somebody like that, you know, take it with a grain of salt. Because I have watched a lot of videos on missing 411. And some of them, I'm listening to them go, no, that's not what they said. That's not, you know, so you know how it goes. And even like me, when you listen to me talk, you know, take whatever I say with a grain of salt and take what I say and study it on your own and get your own opinion of it. Because that's the great thing about the paranormal field is everybody has an opinion. And, you know, taking everybody's opinion together, we could figure out this stuff. And we never know. You know, like I always say, the more we know, the less we know. Because there's so many rabbit holes that we go down. I mean, that's obvious when you ever talk to me at a convention, then you'll find that I start talking and I'm like, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, wait a minute, we were talking about something completely different. But, you know, that's just how it goes. And that's why I love this field that we do. And that's the missing 411 stuff. It's just so interesting. Look into it. Go, if you're a reader, get his books. You know, David Pelias has several books out, and I think 8 or 9 books on the missing 411 stuff. You know, simple cases from simple cases of people just disappearing and never being seen to these complex ones where the bodies are found or the bones are found in very strange places and very strange things. Now, another opinion that I have of this, and I'm still out on, you know, the jury's out in my mind about this. I don't know if the people are walking into a portal, if Bigfoot's stealing them, you know, but even with Bigfoot, even like David Politis loves Bigfoot and he does Bigfoot research and even says he's never heard of a negative Bigfoot encounter to where a Bigfoot, you know, ripped apart someone's trailer like a dog man does or something like that. But, you know, I mean, could it be UFOs? I remember doing the show, me and Jen did the show about, you know, abductions, and there is on an average of 600,000 people that vanish without a trace every year in the United States. And when I say 600,000, I mean 600,000. It's like the same number every year. So did Eisenhower make a pact with the aliens that they could take so many people? We don't know. But, you know, could it be aliens? Could it be serial killers? Okay, now this is a good one. But the thing about this is, if there's a serial killer out there doing all these things since the 1700s, you know, taking all these people from these cluster areas, there would be evidence by now. There'd be marks in the dirt. There would be, you know, scuff marks from people being dragged away or that. That doesn't happen with this. People just vanish without a trace. David Pilatus brought up, or George Norrie brought up this analogy today that I was listening to the podcast, that it's sort of like those games that you play at the carnival where the arm comes down and picks up the stuffed animal and always drops it. But no, it's like there are people are just plucked out of the air. And there are people that disappear right in front of people. And, you know, I mean, I said earlier that they won't disappear right in front of people where people don't say they saw them vanish, but they'll go around a corner 2 seconds later, walk around the exact same corner on a trail that is on a cliff or whatever, and they'll disappear and never be found. I remember, reminds me of the time that we were in Hocking Hills as kids. And I don't remember this. I was told this by my mom and dad that Jen was walking on a trail and she slipped off of this trail at Hocking Hills, which is a place here in Ohio that's beautiful. And it has these trails along, you know, on the right side, you have the cliff going straight up, and on the left, you have a cliff going down. And she started to slip and some guy came out of nowhere and grabbed her and put her back on the trail and just, he walked away and vanished. So, you know, we always say that's her guardian angel. But in cases like that, people disappear where they'll walk around a corner and it's a path that the case I'm thinking of is a little boy that was walking on a path and, you know, there were rocks all around and he walked around this rock and vanished and he never found him. You know, that's the kind of disappearances that happen. There are people are always alone. They're never like a whole group of people don't disappear. It's always the person in front or back. So if you're ever walking in a pack, get in the middle. Or it's people like the doctor that said, well, I'm going to walk ahead. You guys can catch up. Or the hunter that was sitting in his chair and they came back and he was gone, never to be found. And just like, what's her name? I have wrote down here, Janet, just vanished. And these people vanish and there's no way that they could get as far away from them that they're found or they disappear, never to be found. You know, the gentleman couldn't walk or Janet, she had trouble walking. It's not like the mom came out and saw her 100 yards away walking away. No, she vanished. So who knows? You know, this, like I said, this is so interesting and look it up because your mind's going to get blown. So I want to leave you with that. You know, I've been babbling here for 40 minutes now and talking about this stuff, but I love this stuff and I love UFOs. You know that. And when I saw that article, I'm like, are you kidding me? But I want to bring that to you. Jen should be back next week. I have an idea for a show that I want to talk about. As you know, we went to the Caribbean and this is the first time Jen went. And we made it to the plantation. We did do some ghost hunting. It was tough because we had a group of people with us. And we were there just walking around looking. But we want to tell you our experiences. So I think that's what we're going to talk about next week. Maybe not. Tomorrow, as I'm recording this, today is Friday. Tomorrow, I'm going to Ann Arbor for Potographs, which is a paranormal convention that Tim Malley puts on. And all the proceeds go to the local dog shelter. I'm not vending. I'm just going up to listen to the speakers. Dennis Parry's there, all kinds of people, great people. Mary Bassett's there. My buddy Sarah with Killer Kitchen Chronicles and Paranormal XL podcast is going to be there. I'm going to just mingle. So hopefully I can get some people that will come on my show for you and have some great information for you. But anyhow, thank you so much for listening this week. Like I said, Jen just could not make it. She's still under the weather. She'll be back next week. We're going to have another great show for you. Hope you enjoy your weekend. and the week ahead, please, like I've said many times, get up on our website. There's all kinds of books on there. There's t-shirts, our t-shirt sales. And in the show notes for this show, I will put a link to our Patreon page. If you'd like to help support the show, there's several ways you can do it. You can become a Patreon if you want. We have some great levels there. I'm adding stuff all the time. You can tell a friend. Doesn't cost you a thing. Tell a friend about the show. If you have anybody that you would like on the show, or if you want to be on the show, let me know. If you have any conventions that you would like us to speak at, we are available for speakers. We talk about the Giants. We talk about my shared death experience. We can talk about general paranormal stuff. Our last convention that we spoke at, all we did was talk about our favorite locations, and it was really fun because we got to tell our stories and what happened to us. So that's one of the speeches we do. So let me know if you want us to come out and speak at your convention. We will do it. We love conventions. I love going to conventions. I'll be there tomorrow at Potographs. And then also I have Monster Fest coming up. That one there is in Canton, Ohio. You have to check the date on that. I believe it's in June. I'm going to be there. We're not vending. I'm just going to go hang out. And if you see me at any of these conventions, I'm kind of noticeable. I'll be wearing the 222 shirt. Say hi. Come on up. Say hi. Hang out. Let's talk. Tell me your stories. And like I said, if you want to get on the show, let me know. All right. Hope you have a great week. Let's leave with some Shattered Faces from Dead in 5. And talk to you next week. Have a great week. Goodbye, everyone.
Never understood, even cared, never heard a word what I said.